The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
10 minutes past 1 o'clock, a day that's going to be hot and sunny outside. But here in our studios, our palatial radio studios, we're relaxed and ready to have a nice discussion with our special guest, Senator Brad Hawkins from the 12th District, a man who hasn't been in for a while. We haven't talked politics for a while. And, you know, I don't think we will today either, unless it comes up later in the show. Welcome to the show, Senator.
Thank you. Great to be in studio. That's very special for me. Usually I'm calling in from Olympia from afar, but yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, when we met a couple weeks ago, the governor was in town and you were at the meeting. And I said, come on the show and we'll just talk about you as a person. Now, the reason I bring that up is because we demonize our politicians. Well, we demonize anybody, really, someone who we meet mostly through the media. We don't have a real idea who they are. We only see a fraction of what they're all about. And that must be frustrating. I know it's frustrating to me. People just assume that I'm a disc jockey who got too old to play the records. You know, I don't play the hits, so I do the talk show. And that's fair. Who knows? My background is not really important so much as delving into the human side of people. And that's what we try to do in the agenda sometimes. So let's just pretend we don't know each other. And I'll say, well, where did you go to school? Where were you born, Brad?
Well, I was born just outside Spokane, but I was raised right here in Wenatchee. So I'm proud to have all my upbringing right here in Wenatchee. My K through 12 education was in the Wenatchee School District. A lot of my friends, you know, are still here in the Valley. So I'm very proud of my upbringing here. I've spent many days hiking Saddle Rock and on the Loop Trail and down by the Columbia River and in our foothills. So the Wenatchee Valley has always been home for me. I always wanted to come back home, and I had dreams of raising a family here. And
did you really, before you had a family, you had dreams of raising one here?
Absolutely. I was fortunate enough to get a scholarship for graduate school that took me over to the other Washington, D.C., where I spent 2 years. I studied public policy and public administration. I finished my program there, but I really enjoyed that experience. But, you know, I know that it seems like in our area, other than apples, children are our number one export. So I
we raise beautiful children and send them away. Right.
And I wanted to come back and try to take the experiences I have learned in school and then come back and help my community through public service. And from the moment I stepped foot in Washington, D.C., my goal was to come back to the other Washington. And I'm very thankful that I've had those opportunities and to be raised here. I've been married for 16 years. My wife and I have two boys. They're 8 and 10 years old. So it's a very busy.
That's a busy household.
Yes, it's busy, but not as busy as it used to be. But it's very special for me this time of the kids' lives. They're old enough that we could do a lot of fun things together, and I'll always have a buddy. And I'm still enjoying this window of time with them where I'm still very cool. You know, there will be, I know that time is coming when, you know, your dad isn't quite as cool, you know, during those teenage years.
It does swing back the other way, Senator, but it takes a while.
Yeah. So we're enjoying that time. You know, we've had some time this summer to do a couple fun things too. So I really value my time with my family.
And, well, here's what I've learned from you so far. I think I've been pronouncing Wenatchee wrong. You say Wenatchee.
I think you pronounce it correctly.
I say Wenatchee.
I say it Wenatchee.
They're both acceptable.
I throw a Wenatchee in there a little bit.
I was thinking, my God, all this time I've been saying it wrong.
But I was raised on Orchard Avenue, so, you know, how appropriate is that for Wenatchee, you know?
I think it's pretty close.
Yeah.
Pretty close to being genuine. Now, your wife, that's a hard job to be the wife of any man. But to be the wife of a politician, you've really got to be, you got to be just as tough as the politician is.
Well, you do. And I'm really blessed to have an awesome wife.
Is she protective of you?
She's very protective. You know, some things it's just really hard for her to let go of. I mean, I've developed a very thick skin, and I try not to look at myself as a politician, but as a public servant. And I've, you know, had many years in public service. Before I was elected to the legislature 6 years ago, I served 10 years on two different school boards, including the Eastmont School Board. So I had years of service. I'll tell you what, nothing is harder than serving on your local school board. If you can do that, if you can get through some tough budget times and some, you know, challenging meetings at your local school board at the local level, it seems like you could do pretty much anything. But
local people do get up in arms about their schools.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely. I mean, in terms of educating children, things like that. But we did some really positive things at Eastmont. I really have close bonds still today with those board members. But you know, I've developed a kind of a thick skin over the years, but
Wife remembers every slight that's been said about you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
How can you sit with that man? He's the one that called you blah blah.
But she's so supportive and she's so strong, and really she is the one that, you know, is picking up all the slack when the campaigns roll around and you add that extra layer of work, and, you know, really trying to find a good balance between family and public service. It's been a struggle over the years in some ways, but I think I found that sweet spot and figured out a way that I can honor my community and also honor my family. So.
Is it better for you and your family to have to live here and then you just take off and go to Olympia and come back when you can?
We've done it both ways. When the kids were younger for 5 years, we relocated the whole family over to Olympia. We rented a house and I was able to tuck the kids into bed at night. And I think for my initial 5 years or so in the legislature, that model worked really well. I had really no interest in the whining and dining and nightlife of Olympia and all that sort of stuff and, you know, hanging out.
I don't see Olympia as a nightlife capital of the
state. Well, I mean, is it
in a way?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of receptions during the legislative session. And, you know, it's in some ways a very unhealthy environment when people are going from one or two receptions, two or three receptions a night, having a glass of wine at each and driving around and it's dark and it's rainy. And oftentimes I just, you know, when my kids were young, I just went home and, you know, as busy as I was at the legislature, I got home and got the kids in the bath and could tuck them in and spend time with my family and then wake up and do it all over again. I found that that was a good balance. And now though, as the kids are getting older, I've been traveling back and forth to Olympia, but I've geared up for that. I have a Subaru Outback now with the winter tires, so I'm ready to go in the winter when
it's those damn Cascades. They're in the wrong place, aren't they? We've discussed this many times for people who have to go to the west side all the time.
I know, and if you do go to the west side, if you can do it, you know, kind of avoid Blewett Pass in the winter. That's what I do. I live in Douglas County outside of East Wenatchee, so I always go through Quincy and Vantage, and that works out pretty well. And so far, it's been good, but public service is definitely not without a sacrifice, and just like anybody involved in public service or even certainly families with military service and other things, it involves the whole family. And I tried to keep my job in many ways invisible to my children. I mean, they know of my role. We've had them at the Capitol a lot. They've met the governor and other statewide elected officials. So it's been a good experience for them. But in terms of the stresses of the job, I try my best to keep that, you know, invisible to them.
Plus, if they're 8 and 10, they know that you're the senator, but the real qualities of the job may be a bit of a mystery to them still.
Yeah, I think so. And to me, you know, I try not to identify with my role in the legislature. You know, I don't really believe people's jobs should define who they are. I mean, really, I'm a husband and a father. I'm a proud product of the Wenatchee Valley, and I'm really honored to represent this area in the legislature. The position itself is really something that's, you know, I hold in very high regard, and I try my best to demonstrate a responsible use of the taxpayer dollars and try to be very thoughtful and responsible about the decisions I make. And I think for me, you know, we have a very large legislative district, so whenever these issues come up, sometimes it's a challenge to balance the issues and try to do ultimately in your heart what you believe is in the best interest of the district. But for me, because I was raised here, I do feel a strong connection with almost every aspect of our community, and I am a product of this community. So, you know, I've studied public policy and things like that, so I've been able to apply that judgment. But really what I try to do when push comes to shove is, you know, I was raised in the area, I'm a product of this community, so I try to do my best to trust my instincts.
There are a lot of new candidates, and not just in our area, but all across the country, people with no political experience who have decided to run as Republicans, Democrats, and a lot more independents than we've seen in some time. Do you recall what made you run for the first time and the idealism and the certainty that you had that you could do a good job?
Yeah, well,
And how things have changed.
Yeah, things have changed. And I for one, am really focused on, you know, not so much looking things through the partisan lens, but looking at what's in the best interest of the community. And like I said, I try to look at the position not as a political position, but as public service. But some of my colleagues in the legislature have said, and it's true, they said, you know, Brad, listen, you can't take the politics out of politics. And it's very true. So that definitely does exist. But I do think there are, you know, what I enjoy is the opportunity to find ways to help everybody that comes into my office, whether it's a individual or a group, a constituent who contacts my office. We try to take the approach for customer service. How can we help you? How can we help you be successful? And have you thought about this? Have you met with this group? Well, why don't I bring that group in? Let's all get together and talk about it. But you know, to your question, yeah, I mean, it's definitely been changing, but for me, I was raised with a public service mindset. My father was very involved in this community from as long as I can remember it. And he's really been my inspiration for public service. He's a former Chelan County commissioner. And for me, I can now hopefully demonstrate that commitment to public service for my kids as well.
When do you think you had the idea, the kernel of the idea that public service might be something for you? Eighth grade, sixth grade, fourth grade?
Probably so. Probably middle school to high school. I was involved in some local campaigns. You know, we had the heyday of the 12th Legislative District when the Speaker of the House was a resident of the 12th District. We had the House Majority Leader Dale Foreman served in the legislature, George Seller, and others. So I recall those gentlemen when I was very young. And I actually served as a Washington State Senate intern during college. So I spent at least one legislative session over in Olympia as a young person. And so I was kind of involved at a younger age. And it really kind of just opened my eye up to public service.
Do interns see it all? Sooner or later.
I got a chance to see a lot and experience a lot. But, you know, it's one of those things where I encourage everybody to be involved in some level of public service, you know, if your schedule will allow you to do that. And for me, you know, I've had different types of public service, and some certainly have had greater levels of public exposure than others, and certainly public scrutiny and things like that. But I think there's a lot of really hardworking public servants in this community, whether you're an elected official at, you know, the city of Wenatchee, or whether you're a staff member at the city of Wenatchee, and our local governments, the PUDs and counties and water districts, sewer districts, and, you know, really all of the public servants in that space, and everybody who, you know, I was raised here, and just coming through our Apple Blossom Festival, you get to see how everybody chips in to help each other. And it's been very special. So there's a lot of opportunities to serve. I just happen to serve in the state legislature, and I have the responsibility of taking votes on behalf of this district, which is an awesome responsibility. But I don't think people have to run for office necessarily to be good public servants.
We probably have only one thing in common, and that it, well, maybe several, but one that I can see right away, and that is the people that we serve sometimes don't like our product, and they're angry about it, and it's very difficult to set them straight. My personal example is we'll get an angry email about a news story, and the person cannot be satisfied by anything, by any power on earth. And they want the station reprogrammed and the news to be from a different angle and different people to be responsible for it. And it's impossible to set them in a state of mind where they feel that they've been heard and their complaints are going to be acted upon. We just can't change the whole radio station for every person who complains. We try to address those complaints, whatever they may be, but sometimes they're right on the edge of being unreasonable. And I just wonder if you suffer with that too, because you're trying to decide, can we help this person, or is this person just disturbed?
Well, we certainly try to help everybody who contacts us, and fortunately have a really good staff that assists me with that. But
can they help me with my emails then? Because I never know what to write back.
Yeah, well, one thing that might surprise a lot of people, but, you know, and it's something about people in this day and age when you get behind the phone or you're behind the keyboard, even if your name's attached to it, something about, you know, using the keyboard and stuff, people desensitizes people to what they're communicating. But for me, I try to review every email, and particularly we pay very close attention. We have a very rigorous process for separating out the constituent emails from the non-constituents, and I personally try to respond to the constituent correspondence. I have the staff members separate all that. Sometimes during the legislative session, we'll get over, you know, 600 emails a day, and you sift it all out. 200 of those are from constituents. So, it, you know, it ebbs and flows, but, you know, we do get a lot of emails, and some of them can be nasty. But for the most part, I think I always try to take the approach of all these positions exist to serve the people who elect us. And if I can try to provide some level of constituent customer service and help explain my policy rationale for why I voted a certain way, or get them connected with the state agency that might be able to assist them, or if they're actually mistakenly contacting us about a federal issue, then we try to support them in contacting their federal elected officials. So I think there's a way that we try to help everybody. And for me, that's just, again, that's the servant's heart, and that's the approach I try to take. Every legislator's a little different. You know, some people approach their job very differently, and that's okay. I mean, everybody's allowed to, you know, serve in the way that they feel is in the best interest of their district. But for me, in our district, it's very large geographically. It covers four counties, all of Chelan County, all of Douglas, part of Grant County, and about half of Okanagan County, all the way to the Canadian border.
Is it too big?
No. Well, it's very large. I mean, all the districts are supposed to be balanced by population. And so the Seattle districts for state senators are much more densely populated. I think the city of Seattle has three or four state senators. But then when you get into eastern Washington, three or four Senate districts cover most of eastern Washington. But I guess for me, you know, there are some challenges with such a large geographical area. And we have a diversity, too, within that. And the way I think of it is we have a whole spectrum of various different political thoughts and philosophies throughout the 12th district. And my job as our state senator is to represent everybody. And so I really try my best to be thoughtful and responsible and be a good listener. I know oftentimes I spend time talking with you on the radio, and it's really important for people to know that I understand the issues and want to hear from me and want to hear me speak. But really, as a legislator, one of the most important jobs is being a good listener. And that's what I try to do as well. So I'd really try to be a good listener and balance all those concerns across the districts and ultimately make a decision what I feel is in the best interest of our area.
I'm only guessing because the only thing I know about politics is I was high school student body president and I didn't do anything the entire term. So it was pretty easy for me. It was a job made for me, as a matter of fact.
That'd be perfect.
But on the other hand, I didn't feel like I had anything to accomplish. But you have great responsibilities to your constituents and to yourself for self-respect.
Yeah.
And I wonder what you enjoy about it the most. What is it that really turns you on?
I enjoy helping people. You know, I know oftentimes when we talk about legislative accomplishments, and I'm proud to have secured a certain multi-million dollars for this bridge facility or this project. But, you know, really what I enjoy most and what oftentimes people will never hear about are the constituents who contact us with issues. They're having difficulty interacting with a state agency. They don't have certain answers to their questions, and I think the state agencies, most of them, try to do their best to serve, you know, our state, but they get backlogged too, and sometimes they disregard, and sometimes some of them just aren't very efficient. But what I try to do, and I really take a lot of pride in, is getting personally involved and trying to help get answers to their questions. And part of it is the tone we set too with the staff that work for my office. They're essentially extensions of me, and so I want them to be to understand the approach to constituent customer service that I hold in high regard. So we really focus a lot on making sure that we are providing good value to the constituents who do contact us. Because, like I said, we're here to represent the people who elect us. And if you think as a legislator that your job is something else, then you're mistaken.
You've made a big mistake. You, whoever I'm talking to, you have made a big mistake.
Sure.
Now, you talked about your staff. They were very kind to send me an email. They said, be sure to ask Brad about these items. Now, here's one that I wouldn't have thought of.
Uh-oh.
Ask him about his favorite music.
Oh, my favorite music. Sure. Well, I actually listened to all sorts of things today. I did listen to a bit of KPQ, but I also enjoy Coho, a little bit of music on Coho. Listen to a little Taylor Swift on Pandora, her station. I like the women's pop voices a little bit, but this might surprise you, though. One of my favorites ever is Neil Diamond. I saw Neil Diamond in concert. I've seen him in concert 3 times.
Really?
So absolutely. America, Sweet Caroline, you name it. I'm a huge, huge Neil Diamond fan, and he's no longer touring. But like I said, I saw him in Spokane and the Key Arena twice over a number of years, over like 15 or 20 years. For whatever reason, I grew up enjoying kind of the oldies. So a little bit of Motown, a little bit of Beach Boys and, you know, all those songs. And then it grew into Neil Diamond. And yeah, I don't think there are too many more bigger Neil Diamond fans out there than me.
Number one Neil Diamond fan. Well, I wouldn't have guessed. Well, you can't guess somebody's favorite artist. It's just impossible.
Impossible.
All right. That's good. That's a good answer. Now, you've been very forthcoming. What do you have planned for the next legislative session that's really top of mind that you want to achieve?
Well, that is interesting. You know, the state of Washington, the legislature meets annually, but we budget on a two-year basis. And this past year, we were in the short legislative session because we had to make minor modifications and updates to the existing two-year budget. But the next two-year budget is upon us. So 2017 to 2019 is the budget we're now operating under. And so when we meet next year in 2019, beginning in January, we'll be developing the two-year budget, you know, beyond that point, starting July 1st of 2019.
Will it be the wrestling match the last one was?
It's going to be big. Yeah. It's going to be big. Yeah, there's, I imagine the legislature will continue to be pretty closely divided philosophically. Fortunately, our state economy has been doing really well. Our national economy is doing well as well. And what happens when that occurs is we have extra revenue generated to the state of Washington, more people purchasing goods and services. So without raising the sales tax, we've just had more collections because there have been more purchases. The business and occupation taxes and other taxes, you know, there's a steady stream. So what we're seeing as far as revenue goes is we've seen more revenue come in than what we even projected it to be at the time we were developing our budget. So getting a good handle of the revenue forecast, I mean, I'm not exactly sure, you know, what things are going to, how the revenue picture is going to look come January of next year, but hopefully the trend continues. I know there's some concerns about our economy and Apple's and what Amazon's doing and things like that, but hopefully our tech economy in the West Side will stay strong, our ag economy will do well, and we'll continue to see additional revenue flow into the state of Washington so that we can make important investments in K-12 education, higher education, health and human services, and other areas. But what I want to do, too, is during the good times, we need to make sure we're very prudent with taxpayer dollars and set aside a good portion of those so that we can absorb any economic downturns as well.
And how does the state do that? How can they decide what to set aside for a rainy day?
Well, we do have what's called a rainy day fund, also known as the budget stabilization account, that the state of Washington voters approved, I believe, in 2007. It required a constitutional amendment. It does require during times of extraordinary revenue growth that a certain percentage of that is set aside for, you know, in this budget stabilization account, and only with certain votes, you know, a supermajority and others would be required to dip into that account outside of emergencies. You know, if there's a massive fire and things like that or flooding, there's different parameters for when we can utilize that budget stabilization account. But beyond the budget stabilization account, I just think it's very prudent that when we're developing these $45, $46 billion two-year operating budgets, that we set aside a healthy amount of reserves on an ongoing basis so that during, you know, if there is an economic downturn, and knock on wood, we hope there isn't, but usually there are. And when there's occasionally a dip in the economy, then, you know, we don't collect as much in sales tax revenue and other tax sources, so we need to be prepared to insulate ourselves during those tough times so that we can protect taxpayers and avoid the tax pressure and protect the services that we're investing in the state.
Put a little aside. It only makes sense. Brad Hawkins has been our guest, Senator Brad Hawkins from the 12th District. Thanks for coming by today. Please come by again, and it's a great talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Michael. And it occurred to me,
yes,
I should interview you sometime since, you know,
all right,
people don't know your background quite as much, you know.
I'll have my people give you a list of questions to ask.
Let's do that.
Yeah, we're gladly to. In fact, no one's ever suggested that before, at least not on this show. So you're on. Anytime you want to come back, we'll figure that one out.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.